Author of the Week, Thursdays, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone, just south of Kearney. Jay Richards, one of the three authors of The Price of Panic, How the Tyranny of Experts Turned a Pandemic into a Catastrophe. And the timing of this is I think, well-placed for a number of reasons. Earlier this morning, we did a couple of interviews with local people here, citizens, one that was an admin for a Facebook page that was supportive of mask mandates and some of the restrictions put on businesses, and then someone who was on the opposite side. And there was a comment that was made by the administrator who was laying out his case regarding these mandates that, you know, we hear quite often, and that is, well, we all know, this isn't an exact quote, but it is along the lines of that, you know, well, we know that masks work, you know, that these mandates work, that these things that, you know, science is settled to a degree on these things. And so at the same time, I mentioned this new study that was conducted by researchers at Stanford University and published in the European Journal of Clinical Investigation found that really when it came down to these countries that employed mandatory lockdown orders and business closures compared to others that didn't so much, that really there was no measurable difference or improvement in dealing with COVID. So The Price of Panic, How the Tyranny of Experts Turned a Pandemic into a Catastrophe. I want to thank you, Jay Richards, for being with us this morning. And I'm one of these folks that I'm just always curious and try to get information. And it's very frustrating, this particular issue, like a lot of other issues that should be more, or it should be less political, if you will, because we're talking about searching out facts and evidence. Yet, I mean, it just seems as if you have any intellectual curiosity about this, you're called a denier. You are, you know, just chastised as somebody who is a science denier, and you're part of the problem. And I find that very frustrating. I can only imagine what it's like for somebody like you.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, a virus should not be a partisan issue. And it's not like, you know, if we'd talked last January when we were first hearing about this new virus in China, I had no particular view on it one way or the other. Yeah. It wasn't really until March when I realized that we were actually following a predictive computer model at the Imperial College London and making major public policy decisions based on a model that hadn't actually even been tested yet, that I got curious. My co-author started getting worried, and we realized, oh my word, this is we've got a runaway train here, and we're actually creating a global policy response to a bug that we, at the time, we hardly understood. The model assumed it had a 3.4% infection fatality rate, which would have made it much worse than the Spanish flu. It was all conjecture. And as soon as we learned anything, we realized, wait, we fundamentally misunderstood the nature of the coronavirus. Moreover, we're using policies like lockdowns that had never been tried before. Though it's not like we started out knowing lockdowns worked. And then by early summer, as we show in the book, we could actually map out the case curves and the dates for the lockdowns, and we're able to find it. In fact, the government imposed lockdowns, they made absolutely no difference to the case curves. And so, I mean, this is just sort of straight data. This is data we were getting from the CDC. So it's not like it was some weird denialist website. That's what's so frustrating about it, is that if you spend 20 minutes researching it, as you said, you realize, okay, the official story I'm seeing at the Chiron at CNN is not exactly what's going on.
Well, and then those that are not the researcher that you or the other authors are and experts in these fields, just even some of the simple discussions. And early on, we would talk about the response to this versus the response to other things, like the flu, for example. And you know, you mentioned, well, you know, you can have 60, 70, 80,000 people die of the flu. And they're like, and the response would be, you're a denier. It's not the flu. It's, you know, and it's like, no, that's not the point here. You know, that's not what we're talking about reasoned response. We're talking about numbers and facts. And I'm curious if you know, or if you have any just idea why things went off the rails here. How did we go from what generally speaking would be, all right, well, let's look at the facts and what they mean, to totally diverting from that? Because people do things for reasons. And if the motivation is not getting to the truth, what do you think was the motivation that has caused us to go so off the rails in dealing with this?
Well, it's a little bit of a complicated story. That's why we talk about the tyranny of experts. It's basically a combination of speculative computer models accepted by few very influential public health officials, from Dr. Tedros, the head of the World Health Organization, to public health officials in the United States like Dr. Fauci. People don't realize these massive public health bureaucracies that have been built up in the last 50 years are effectively political entities. It's not just a bunch of doctors looking for who they can help. These are actually political entities. And so they look sort of for political expressions, effectively. And so between these speculative models, which were believed by public health officials, the public health officials in turn were lionized by the media. That's why we know who Dr. Fauci is, for instance. As opposed to being one of 50 advisors to presidents and governors and prime ministers, they became these infallible oracles. So even if they were changing their minds every 48 hours, they were supposed to determine policy. And it was that weird combination of factors. That's what we call the tyranny of experts, an expert elevated outside his jurisdiction and competence, and then amplified by social media so that it created what we think is the first planetary social contagion. We really think that more than anything is the story of 2020, is that we had both the conditions institutionally and the technology to allow this kind of social panic to happen.
You know, I think a snapshot that illustrates that is something that occurred quite publicly here in the Springfield area. And it was during a period of time, maybe summer, even spring, I don't recall. And it was when they were doing testing and so forth. And it was before they were full on the mask, you know, like mask is the end all be all. And there was a person who tested positive that worked at a Great Clips, you know, that cut hair. And they had gone into work, but they had worn a mask. And the local experts came out publicly, and I mean just about did everything but lynch this person for being so irresponsible, for being so dangerous. And they had this such a public relation lynching of this individual that the other Great Clips in the area had to shut down because they were getting death threats from citizens.
Wow.
Now, that being said, just weeks later, whenever whomever decided masks were the end-all be-all, those same local leaders were used, because what happened was it turned out not a single person that hairdresser came in contact with got COVID. Not a single one did.
Yeah.
And they started saying it was because they wore a mask. So the very person that they were demonizing and whipping the public up into a mob over, they were later using as an example of how to successfully prevent COVID from being spread.
I mean, that's a perfect sign that we're not dealing with rationality here. We're dealing with a social panic in which people respond that way. I mean, anyone with a memory remembers that we were initially told, if you're in the general public, it doesn't make any sense for you to wear a mask. And then within about 6 weeks, suddenly it was your absolute moral obligation to wear a mask. Well, turns out, you know, you can look this up online. The World Health Organization did a major analysis of all the studies on masks, all the studies on lockdowns, published it in October 2019, right before the pandemic started. And said there's no good evidence that these work well for the general population. And if you sort of look around, it's sort of obvious why. I mean, if everybody wears a tightly fitted, clean, perfect N95 respirator, that's probably going to help some. But nobody can do that. And so what we're wearing is essentially these pieces of fabric and diapers and cloths over our faces, most of them dirty. And there's just absolutely no evidence that they work. But this is being enforced not based on a careful analysis of the scientific data. It's just based on this kind of moral panic that unfortunately continues to be perpetuated by the media. So as long as we're unable to be discerning consumers of media, we will just continue to be led along like this.
We're talking with Jay Richards, one of the authors of The Price of Panic, How the Tyranny of Experts Turn a Pandemic into a Catastrophe. Different people have different motivations. Of course, when you look at political figures, oftentimes people see it as just a way to control, or at least to maybe even in their minds think that they are giving comfort to people because they are appearing to do something that can make a difference. But where oftentimes people do scratch their heads when they see the evidence, they see the actual numbers that indicate that masks, for example, in these lockdowns don't work, but then they'll hear medical experts, doctors talk about how you have to do it. And that's confusing to people because in their minds, somebody who's in the medical profession, clearly their goal is for the health of people. So why or how do they end up preaching a message that is contrary to what the evidence shows?
Well, I mean, here's the difficulty. I hate to say this, but I have friends who are physicians. But just because you're a physician and you deal with people clinically, it doesn't mean you've actually gone and looked at the research. I mean, I'm referring to a report from the World Health Organization. I'm quite confident that 99% of physicians in the United States, they don't actually read the World Health Organization statements. I mean, that's what's so frustrating about this is because it requires at least a little bit of research. But I've told people very often when we're talking about, say, the infection fatality rate, literally anyone can go to the CDC website. You can just do a little arithmetic and you can figure out, okay, the infection fatality rate for the bug is not 3.4%. It's maybe 0.25% at the top. And that's just literal arithmetic from the CDC, but almost nobody does that. I mean, the reality is that we all have our specialties. If your specialty is working on retinas, right, that are detached or something, that's what you know. And on the other stuff, you don't necessarily know anything than any other educated person. And so it really does require discernment, and in some cases it requires doing a little bit of your own research, getting to the sources. The good news is actually the sources are available. It just requires digging a little deeper than the headlines or the trending on the Twitter feed.
Our author of the week, sponsored by ABC Books, Jay Richards, The Price of Panic, How the Tyranny of Experts Turned a Pandemic into a Catastrophe. Of course, the other side of this is the people's reaction. And Springfield, again, in my opinion, has done a superb job of pinning citizens against one another, whether it's the press conferences or encouraging people. And this is what they've done here, to call 911 if they see someone not in compliance. Now, of course, Springfield specifically, there are even exemptions for some people with health issues. Now, if you see a person without a mask, you don't know if they have an exemption, but they've created this hostile atmosphere, and it has given some people this almost weapon, this power over others that they seemingly are addicted to. Has the reaction of the American people that once upon a time we had this culture of live and let live and liberty and freedom and you do your thing, I'll do mine, turn into this almost civil war of reporters against those who don't comply in such a drastic fashion in such a short period of time? I mean, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, in fact, this is the thing that surprised us the most. We thought by June that the public would wake up to what was going on and to realize the difference between the kind of official story and the real facts. What we were amazed at is that all summer, over half the population was continuing to say, no, I think we'd still need to have lockdowns and things like this. As you said, this kind of self-censoring and even self-reporting and snitching, it really is a sort of terrifying thing. But it can only happen as long as that happens. If 70% of the population finally decides, okay, we've had enough of this, then it ends. But the reality is we were told, unlike, you know, if we had been told, okay, you got to stay inside, you can't go to your job, you can't go to church for your own good, we would not have complied. But instead, we were told, you have to do this not for yourself, but for other people. And that made it so compelling. And we've got to learn how to sort of make discerning decisions when we're told, okay, do it for the other person.
I'm stereotyping with a broad brush here, but there's part of me that gets a little bit of joy out of watching some of this play out, because you will see certain elites that really fancy themselves so much more educated and informed than, you know, people in my part of the country, flyover, hillbilly, Ozarks type, yet the people that are in the flyover country and in the more rural areas, the less, quote, educated areas, their behavior seems more in line with the facts and the science than the so-called elites. And a perfect cultural example happened this summer at Osage Beach, the Lake of the Ozarks here. Mm-hmm. And there was a huge on video. It was a pool party and people weren't wearing masks. And I mean, the media went apoplectic. It was going to be a super spreader event. These people were tantamount to murderers. They were going to be killing off hordes of people. Now, of course, they found the only person that tested positive for COVID was somebody who had it when they went there, but it didn't pass to anyone. Mm-hmm. Yet these elites that are so educated are acting contrary to what the facts are. And that upside down world, I find a little bit humorous.
Well, it is. And I really do think, I mean, the truth of the matter is none of us are initially experts on viruses, right, but we do have a good dose of common sense. And so if the official experts are telling you one day you absolutely shouldn't wear a mask and the next day they tell you that you absolutely have to, you can be quite confident that it's not because of a scientific study. It's some kind of social or cultural dynamic involved. And I think people just need to really trust their common sense on these things. And in this case, I honestly think common sense is a better guide than some of the official wisdom that we're supposedly getting from our betters.
And a final question, and then any final thoughts you have as we talk with our author of the week, Jay Richards, the book Price of Panic, How the Tyranny of Experts Turned a Pandemic into a Catastrophe. I get info from people quite often, and a lot of times it's speculation. And sometimes they're like, well, you know, I was told this and that. And it was relayed to me by a person who generally is in contact with people in the know that it was known at some of the upper levels in government, specifically the CDC, that ultimately the masks, they were not in any meaningful actual way going to prevent the virus from spreading. But It was more done in order to prevent panic, which is ironic given what we've seen, to prevent panic by giving people the sense that at least they knew how to do something in order to have some sort of control over whether they would get the virus, or at least something that gave them the sense of power over the likelihood that they'd get it. They could diminish that likelihood. Is that something that you think is plausible?
I do think that's possible, actually, because the reality is, as I mentioned, the World Health Organization itself had already done an analysis of the studies. I'm quite certain that the director of the CDC knows the research on masks. Notice they weren't telling us to wear properly fitted N95 masks. Mm. They wanted to reserve those for healthcare workers. Yeah. They're telling us to use surgical masks that are never meant to prevent aerosolized viruses. And so I think that's in some ways the most charitable interpretation, is they thought, okay, we know it won't really make any difference, but at least it will help people feel good. It's sort of like the security theater at airports. It may not really protect us, but if we feel like we're protecting, that honestly, I can't prove that, but I think that is a plausible theory.
Well, your comparison to the airports is right on. I've always compared it to this epiphany I had years ago when cell phones first came out, not the bag phones, but the smaller ones. And there were these little plastic antennas you could pull up, and mine broke, and I went in to get it fixed. And I was told, those don't do anything. It's just plastic. And I was like, well, what's the point? And they said, well, you know, and this was before, you know, reception was in and out oftentimes. Yeah. They said, well, it just makes people feel as if they get better reception, that they can do something. So they don't call us. They pull it up. I've always remembered that. And that's what I think of whenever I think about these masks and the possibility it's more about trying to keep people calm. But of course, it's turned them into these agents of government in many instances. Any final thoughts that you have for people or what you want them to really take away from the book Price of Panic?
Honestly, more than anything, I want people to realize that you when you're deciding on a public policy response, you want to do it based upon knowledge and not based upon an emotional reaction. I mean, my fear, the reason we wrote this book so quickly is that we knew we couldn't stop 2020, but we really hope we would learn these lessons and not do another rolling barrage of lockdowns in 2021. That's our fear. And the one thing that will prevent that is if a large percentage of the American population realizes, okay, look, we're just not going to do this anymore.
Jay Richards, Price of Panic, How the Tyranny of Experts Turned a Pandemic into a Catastrophe, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone. Thank you very, very much for being with us and for taking the time to provide this information to people at large. I hope you have a wonderful day.
Great to be with you. Thanks so much.
Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed.